This is a primer in what to do. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Great to be back with you, Barry. I'm always happy to be back making new shows since we've done so many reruns lately.
Well, it is. And we've had quite a month this last month with technical issues and hard drive crashes and numerous things that just make you kind of feel like somebody out there doesn't want to hear us on the radio.
Well, since it's a higher power, we have to take it.
Yes, and it's not the Republican or the Democratic Party, either one. So, yeah, we have to take that. One of the things, Chuck, that we do that our listeners understand is our Institute on the Constitution classes. One of the things that we haven't really talked about full well is one of the things that's a benefit of being involved in our classes, because at the end of the class, usually twice a year, we have a graduation ceremony. And in that graduation ceremony, we bring in National Executive Director of Institute on the Constitution and a noted constitutional, I guess expert would probably be a good word to use, but a humble researcher like ourselves, Pastor David Whitney, who is the director. And he teaches the graduates of our IOTC class a condensed version of a six-week course, and he does it in about 3.5 hours, called the Fully Informed Juror. Now, this is a class that is a bonus for our graduates of IOTC, because we feel that once they've figured out the Constitution and how to use it as a tool for their liberties, there's another arena in which they can learn history and understanding and also tactics and strategies for securing and keeping our liberties, and that is as a juror in our nation's courts. And it just so happens that it's very germane at this point because our graduation ceremony is coming up here in a couple of weeks, and one of our folks is getting firsthand knowledge of being on a jury. Well, thankfully, that person isn't a recent graduate. He's one of our instructors. It's Chuck. And we want to take some time today to give you a little instruction through Chuck telling you about his experiences of being called to be a juror.
Well, actually, Barry, this is my second tour of duty as a juror
in about four years.
And the two experiences are sort of a night and day. My first experience was in the Court of Common Pleas. And if you understand the difference, we should probably explain this. The Court of Common Pleas is an Ohio court. It's not a federal court. It's a state court.
Yes.
And it's actually administered by the county. And it's in Franklin County. And what it handles are felony cases. It handles cases and also civil cases above $15,000 in value. So all civil cases and felony criminal cases will go through the Court of Common Pleas. And so actually my first jury was a felony domestic violence assault and kidnapping charge. I was called for a 2-week trial, mm-hmm. and out of the 10 days it took 9. I was called the first day. I had just sat down in the jury pool to get my computer out and start tapping away and doing some work, because you can do that. They have setups and network access, so you can actually go back and do work while you're waiting to be called for a jury. And I got called, and I went through what they call voir dire, which is the questioning by the defense and prosecution attorneys. And we'll do more on that on this little segment later. Mm-hmm. But I made it through voir dire, and the jury was impaneled, and I was one of the regular jurors. I don't even remember. They give you a number. I think I was juror number 5 or something.
Okay.
So we listened to the facts of the case. And after that was completed, and we actually had to go back and do the deliberations and that kind of thing. And I was actually elected foreman of the jury. And sounds really cool. You're a clerk. You sort of herd the cats, if you will. And just make sure that the discussions stay on the track and keep within the bounds kind of the evidence and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So my job was to notify the judge if there were any questions and actually fill out the jury forms when we actually came to a verdict. So part of my job was to word the questions in such a way we'd have jurors multiple jurors would have questions, and I would basically take those questions, condense them down into a single question or a couple of questions, and then we'd flip a switch for a blue light to come on, and the judge would know that we had a legal question. And so we did that a couple of times, and we were able to come to a verdict, and actually we had both guilty and not guilty. Since it was a 3-count indictment, we actually found guilty on 2 of the counts and not guilty on 1. So, that being said about that particular experience, I've now been called into what's called municipal court, and that is also run by Franklin County, and it's where all the little misdemeanor cases are, and when I say little, some of them aren't so little. But any civil case under $15,000 and any misdemeanor case. Now, what's interesting, Barry, is that juries don't serve in this capacity. But any case that goes on to common pleas court is arraigned in municipal court. And an arraignment is essentially where you go in, there's a hearing to see if there's enough evidence to send you, bound you over for trial. And that happens in municipal court. So, what juries do in municipal court is they hear cases of things like petty theft, anything that's a misdemeanor, some non-felony drunk driving cases, OMVI. Petty theft, as I said before, there's all kinds of little things that can happen in these little petty disputes with small lawsuits. So, essentially, in my particular case, I have been called. We started last week, and that's the Tuesday after Memorial Day. And, of course, that meant that we'd lost a day. So my jury duty was very nice because I only had 4 days the first week. And this is kind of typical for municipal court. Unlike the common pleas court, I got called for this 2 weeks and I didn't expect to get called for a jury that's going to last the whole time. You never know in common pleas court how long it's going to take. And like I said, my first one lasted the whole 2 weeks. I assumed in this one it was going to be onesie-twosies. In other words, call you, do voir dire, and then maybe you do a one-day trial. Maybe 2 days if it's something really complex for a municipal court. And so far, that's been the experience of the people who've actually been called for a jury. Now, I got called for a jury, and my experience has been rather unique in that I was called late in the afternoon, about 3 o'clock, and I went in, and I'm not going to give you the judge's name or the defendant's name or any of the details, any of the attorneys or anything.
That's probably safe.
Yeah, I'm sure I'm okay with this. Well, it was a misdemeanor drunk driving case, and there were something like 16 of us called, and in municipal court, you only seat 8 jurors. You seat 8 with 2 alternates. In common pleas court, you seat 12 and 2 alternates. So, in any case, I was called. And they begin the voir dire, the questioning. And, first of all, the prosecuting attorney asked the question, has anybody here ever been involved in a drunk driving situation, arrested for it, or accused of it, or actually on the other end of it, like in an automobile accident or something? And, of course, I held up my hand, because 32 years ago, I was in a head-on collision with a drunk driver. And they go through the whole thing. Well, do you think that this will cause you to be not objective in a trial? And I said, nah, I don't think so. I mean, it's 32 years ago. I think I'm over it by now. And you know, I know better than to assume guilt. You know, I understand that when you go into a trial, you assume innocence, and they have to prove the guilt. A basic tenet of America.
Chuck, yeah. You just got yourself kicked.
Well, no, actually, they made a case of that. They wanted to make sure that we understood that presumption of innocence is part of the deal. So they knew what I had been in a drunk drive, me and a couple other people, and there were people on the jury pool who basically were not comfortable because they were EMTs and nurses and things, and they saw the result of drunk driving, so they weren't sure they could be objective. I don't think I'd have a problem with that. Anyway, so as the questioning goes on, the defense attorney asks the question, who here has served on a jury before? And of course, I raised my hand. Who here has been a foreman before? And I raised my hand. And so he kind of zeroed in on me. And he asked, how did you enjoy it? I said, it was an interesting experience. Enjoy being on a jury. I don't know if I enjoyed it. But the questioning got down to, who here has a scientific background? And I raised
my hand. Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah. I raised my hand and he again zeroes in on me. He goes, what'd you do? I said, well, I was an analytical chemist. I have a degree in biochemistry. I was an analytical chemist. I was an instrumentation specialist. And he's like, oh man, you want to see it like a hawk who sees a rabbit in a field? The eyeball locked and he was on me. And I mean, he spent 2/3 of his time at voir dire questioning me personally. And it got down to the point where he was asking me specifics about calibration of instruments and all kinds of stuff. And at one point, the prosecutor objected and said, Judge, and she said, yeah. She says, you can't have this juror testify as an expert witness. So he was asking me all these questions.
You just lost twice, Chuck, because how much did they pay you a day for jury duty?
$20. $20 a day.
$20 a day. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I know a number of attorneys. An expert witness usually starts at about $1,500 for testimony, and that usually doesn't last more than an hour.
Yeah, exactly.
So, $20 a day versus a potential of $1,500 as an expert witness, that judge has just cost you some money, Chuck.
I don't think I can act as an expert witness while I'm actually sitting in the jury pool. I'm pretty sure that
probably not going to work.
Yeah, well, the problem really was that it became obvious to all the potential jurors how he was going to try his case. He was going to call the equipment used to do the breathalyzer test into question. And we all knew it from the line of questioning he took with me. He goes through this thing and he lays out this scenario and he asked me how I would think about it. And I said, okay, you've left me hanging. I don't know enough about the equipment. I don't know enough about blah, blah, blah. And he asked me if I knew all this equipment. I said, sure, I know how to use it. He says, have you ever calibrated an instrument? And I go, I've calibrated every instrument I've ever used. Are you kidding me? I was a lab tech, and I was using some pretty sophisticated equipment. So he was asking me about the expense of the equipment and all this stuff, and I said, what's the most expensive piece of equipment you can think of? I said, probably an electron microscope. He goes, well, how about one you would use? And I said, well, that ICP unit was pretty pricey. And he said, yeah, I know somebody that sells them. That he sells two a year, and he makes a great living. So, yeah, they're expensive. But in any case, after that experience, and the judge had to gavel him down and tell him not to question me as an expert, because he was asking me questions about how many points of calibration would you do? Is an instrument as accurate at one end as it is at the other? And I go, well, I don't know, but one point calibration is meaningless. 2-point calibration is almost useless. You have to do multiples. And boy, she didn't like that either. And so eventually he questioned a few more people about some items just to find out who he really did want on the jury. And so when you're done with voir dire, they send you back into a jury room to wait while they hash it out, who they want, who they don't want, because they don't want to hash that out in front of you for obvious reasons.
Of course not.
So we get back into the jury room. The first thing everybody does is points at me and says, you're getting cut.
Of course you are. Absolutely.
I said, yeah, one of them's going to cut me. But I said, is it going to be the prosecution or is it going to be the defense? And I think it probably was the prosecution, but I don't know for sure. You never know. But based on the questioning, I would guess that the prosecution would let me go because I knew too much about all this instrumentation. And although the defense guy doesn't really know what I'm thinking and how much I know about the equipment and that kind of thing, but everybody in the room said, well, we know how he's going to try the case because he'd let the cat out of the bag by doing this big thing about he created a theoretical scenario. And it was about this instrument that did this, that, and another thing. And we all said, okay, he's going to question the science behind the unit that was used to do the breathalyzer test.
Of course.
Yeah, exactly. And I think nobody wanted me on there because I knew too much about instrumentation. So, folks, sometimes what you know about certain things can get you eliminated from a jury. I'm living proof. In 4 days, that's the only one I've been called for. I have 5 more days to go. I'm sure I'll get called again. They told us we would probably. Now, to tell you about the docket, for instance, the first day on Tuesday, there were 172 cases docketed for trial with, wow. I think there are 15 or 16 judges on that bench. There were 172 cases docketed for trial. By the time we left the building, actually by the time they were calling the first jury, they were down to 8 possible jury trials, and they had whittled it down to one or two, I think. And the way that happens is different ways, plea bargains, continuations, all kinds of different things. So we've kind of laid it out for you. But ladies and gentlemen, that's what you can expect if you get called for jury duty. If you get called, go. First of all, it's not that bad. Second of all, it's required by law. So just go. Don't make them send the sheriff out to put you in handcuffs and drag you in.
No, it really isn't that frightening. And when folks take our fully informed jury class, or if they take the IOTC class and then go to the fully informed jury condensed version that's going to be given by Pastor Whitney, I think they're going to find out that there's a lot that you can learn about being on a jury that will help you and your fellow citizens to secure our liberty.
Yeah, exactly. And we're out of time, but don't try to get out of jury duty. Just go do it. It's an experience you need to do. And the fact is, if you ever get in a situation where you need a jury, you want somebody who's competent like you are to come in and help judge the case. You don't want them to have to send people out to Walmart to do basically what amounts to an impressment, because that does happen, and they warned us about that. They said people that don't show up and they got a jury trial to run, the judge will send a bus out and just basically grab you out of a Walmart or a Target and throw you on the bus, and you have to come. It's not voluntary. Join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.